Good morning, everyone. We are broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Georgia.
And you're listening to Film Picnic.
What a lovely rainy morning we're having today.
Yes, happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Yeah. We begin, as always, by acknowledging that Film Picnic is recorded on the ancestral lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. This land is referred to as unceded territory because it was not given up freely, and it continues to be home for the Indigenous communities from which it is stolen.
Yes. It is with immense privilege that we talk into these microphones and share our stories, as stories have been shared for generations before us on this land. We hope that Film Picnic can be a space for shared accountability, knowledge sharing, and reconciliation. This always was and always will be Indigenous land.
A deep breath. I feel like we're both, there's just something about a rainy, like the first true rainy fall morning.
It's truly, that we're, summer's over.
Summer, you know what? I'm in all autumnal tones today. I'm in my red boots. I'm in a brown dress. I'm really leaning into the fall.
Georgia stepped out of the car this morning and I was like, wow, who is this goddess? Your outfit matches your hair perfectly.
Well, thank you.
You're so welcome.
Hannah's fitting it up in a red tracksuit for everyone to know.
I'm giving my Sue Sylvester energy today.
Yes, we are doing that. It's Libra season.
It is Libra season, and I am a Libra. A Libra.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry. What else? It's Libra season. It's the season of festivals.
Oh,
must be the season of the fest. That's where the episode title is coming from today.
Yes.
We're leaning into the fall vibes, leaning into the witchy vibes.
It's almost spoopy season.
Yeah. Right on the precipice here. Mm-hmm. Today, I think we just really want to take some space to talk about everything that's been going on.
It's been a lot, you guys. Our first month with this show, it's been a very busy month of, you know, getting back into school. Like Georgia said, it's film festival season, so we've been trying to attend Vancouver International Film Festival,
yep.
Vancouver Queer Film Festival, Vancouver Latin American Film Festival is going on.
Mm-hmm. POV.
POV, which I organized.
We're going to talk about that later.
But it's been a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud of you, Georgia, and grateful for you because
Thank you, Hannah. Really
did a lot of work last week. So
you know
I know
what?
We've been going back and forth of just being like, thank you. But I just had to express on air that Georgia is killing it, particularly with the research.
Hannah, you're too kind. Hannah, you're too kind. Hannah's also been slaying. Hannah's been really...
Thank you.
Just, I feel like every time we meet and get together, we're like, we want to gab and talk just about like ordinary life things, but then it's always like, oh, wait, I meant to tell you this. I meant to tell you this.
Like, we were saying this last night, but like Georgia and I see each other more than literally anyone else because we work on this show pretty much every day, which it's a blessing. I love it.
A blessing. I was going to say a blessing and a curse, but it's really not a curse
it's
at all.
It's not a curse. I thoroughly enjoy it, and I enjoy working with you, and I think we work so well together.
Yeah.
Let's
get into it.
Let's
talk about it a little bit. I think I have been, just to start with VIF, I feel like that's been really the main course of what's been going on, at least in terms of scale.
That's kind of the biggest festival going on right now, Vancouver International Film Festival.
Happening, they've got like film screening at the Rio, at the Vancouver Playhouse, at the Cinematheque, at obviously the VIF Center.
Yeah.
There's events happening at the Chan Center on campus.
Oh,
there's,
for VIF?
Yes, there's a...
I didn't know that.
Alanis Abomswain and Jeremy Dutcher concert.
That's happening...
Today? Tonight.
Oh,
I think
cool.
It's tonight.
Okay.
I think like what's... really just so impressive and cool about the International Film Festival, like VIF, is that it's impressive and it's difficult because there's so much happening at once and there's so many films playing at once. Like the scale of it is just...
You cannot... That's the thing with film festivals, you guys. Like you want to attend everything. They have showings of feature films, feature documentary. I mean, obviously it depends on the festival, but they have short films. They have pitching sessions.
Talks.
They have panels. There's just so much going on and a lot of it happening at the same time that you really have to... be selective with your time and energy. I remember you and I both went to Fest Film Festival, which is in Portugal. We went at different times. But I remember being there last summer and feeling so overwhelmed with all of the choices. I wanted to go to all the networking dinners and all the master classes and all of that. But it can be an exhausting experience as well.
I will say in the prep leading up to that, because that was really the first proper festival that I had attended, I remember they were kind of briefing us and they were just like, you're going to be watching sometimes like six films in a day. It's like
it's quite intense.
It's a cinephilic time. I was like, what if I fall asleep in the theater? Like, are people going to be upset? And they were like, no, that's just like that's how it is.
And that was a specific experience because we were in another country there specifically for the festival and everything we were doing in our 12 days, however many days there,
something like that, yeah,
was surrounding the festival. With VIF, we live here, we can dip in and out when we need. We have other things going on as well.
True, VIF is difficult now. I feel like I've also been struggling between.
I haven't attended anything at VIF this year.
Oh my goodness, it's like, do I want to
expose myself?
Do I want to attend things, or do I, you know, I have class and I have assignments and I have other things in my life that
so
I need to prioritize.
Much, you guys.
But I will say,
and work and a radio show
on the academic side of things. Mm-hmm. It's been really nice because some of my profs have, or at least my cinema studies profs have been like, oh, well, I mean, well, okay, they weren't explicitly like, please skip my class, but they were like, they just expressed an understanding. Like, there's a festival happening, it's world cinema, it's a time of really education, and I think that's kind of the main point of what we are circling in here on, is that festivals are just, like, what a great site. I mean, and we talked about this a little bit last week with Mila. Zua, when we had her on the podcast, but just
go listen to that episode. It's great.
Episode two, yes. There's so much to be learned, and I feel like you just got to be a sponge and literally just like even the other people that you encounter at festivals, like not even necessarily the events itself, but being in those spaces,
networking,
being in those communities. Yes,
dirty word, connecting. It's a great space to
networking.
Connect with other people who either have the same interests, same taste in film, or maybe you've attended a panel and you really are inspired by one of the panelists talking there. And that's a great place to make that connection. And whether it's, you know, hey, I'd love to grab coffee, or I just want to say I really admired your work. I loved it. Like, oh my goodness, this is terrible. The documentary we watched at Vancouver Queer Film Festival.
Oh, yes. Reagan Latimer.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing that last name correctly. Latimer.
Yes. But we went up after and we were like, we just want to say, don't want to take up too much of your time, but we really, really loved it. Thought points X, Y, and Z were so interesting. And thank you for bringing this.
Yeah. I will say, sometimes I'm like, I don't want to come at it like gushing. And I feel like I do try to be mindful and like,
well, you
come
have
at it from a more respectful way.
Yes.
Instead of like, haha, I'm peeing my pants that I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
You know, because I there is a little bit of the celebrity kind of like, I mean, I don't know, when you're even if it's like a small scale festival, it's an experience to be sitting in a theater watching a screen and, or you know, watching a film, and then you're seeing someone on that screen, and then immediately the lights come up and they're standing in front of you. Like, there's a little bit of a thrill there.
Yeah.
There's a little there. I mean, something about it is very exciting. I don't know. But yeah, I think, like, maybe honestly, let's just like dive a little bit into VQFF. I would love to. Yeah. Hannah and I were lucky to be given, we applied for media passes. Just was an exciting step for the show as well.
Yeah, we got industry passes, you guys. We're officially part of the industry.
A wonderful, just really, like, I think, loving open space.
Queer spaces are my favorite spaces. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember attending, I know we're talking about BQFF, but I remember attending the GLAAD Awards, and I went there by myself, you guys. One of the
strong
films
independent
I acted in was nominated for an award last year, and I went in New York, and I was like, I don't know a single person, but I'm going to show up to this event. I was nervous, but it was a queer space. Everyone was so friendly, so welcoming, and also, like, the fits fire, and that is a great conversation starter.
You know, where there's one creative energy or one creative discipline, many others follow.
Exactly,
I'll say that much.
Exactly. But yeah, everyone was so friendly at VQFF. It was also, like, it is a smaller scale festival, which was nice as well, because I felt like at least the panel that we attended in the film that day, it wasn't like there was so much going on and so much rushing around. Like, the volunteers had time to stop and chat, and
there was
space for conversation.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think, too, like, I think it was really nice to, because it was held, we went to screenings that were held in the international village. So mm-hmm. it was like within a Cineplex.
The Cineplex Odeon.
Yes. Which is just so interesting as like a site for a festival, I think, too, because it's in a mall.
But the mall and it's on like the third back floor. Rooms. No offense. But that mall, it's like walking it's through not a reality.
Weird, you're walking through like a weird liminal space.
You are.
And then it's like.
And then there's a movie theater upstairs.
And then, yeah. And
which
then
also I watched It's a Wonderful Knife. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. You ascend.
That was cool.
Ascend all these stairs, all these escalators. You get to the top. And then suddenly you're just in this bubble of like all these queer creative filmmakers that are like welcoming you and want to talk to you and want to know what's going on. And, you know, it was just. I feel like we're really emphasizing that the energy was good, but I think that was just
it's true.
A really important part of it. To give us, I won't dive too deep into the cultural background, but I do feel like it's important to mention the history of film festivals. Mm. Again, to touch on it really quickly, because this is something that we were studying.
It's important to acknowledge where. Yeah,
where are the roots of the film festival in? They're in Europe,
mm-hmm. Of course.
Like sites for political propaganda to mm-hmm. be screened and shown, mm-hmm. and you know, it's just I think it's just really incredible that it's a cultural event that's kind of come from something that was so deeply, you know, nationalistic or just something that was coming from like a very. It was a cultural event that was coming and being created from a very different purpose.
Yeah.
And the fact that it has survived and, dare I say, evolved.
Ooh, you dare.
I dare. That's not really a daring thing to say. But I don't know. I think it's just beautiful. Like, it's beautiful to see them now as a celebration of, you know, whatever culture or...
Different cultures.
Group or, you know, segment that you're celebrating. For us, it was a queer film festival, mm-hmm. But like we mentioned, there's like the Vancouver Latin American Film Festival that happened that was really lovely.
At the same time that was going on.
Yeah.
In the same spaces, mm-hmm. which was also interesting.
And, you know, you have a gathering space for communities yep. and you're sharing your love of art, but, you know, there's a networking value.
Yes.
You're gaining exposure for your work as a filmmaker. You're meeting people.
Yeah.
You're just, as a viewer, consuming really cool content. Like...
That you're not going to just see on the big screen if you just go to the blockbuster movies.
Mm-hmm. Not that we don't. On occasion love a little blockbuster.
I wore pink to Barbie.
Yeah.
I attended Barbie and I didn't wear pink. I know that's crazy.
Okay.
Another thing I'm going
to
say.
I'm trying to think what I wore. Sorry. No, continue.
Something else exciting this week. The Crazy Eights film that I produced and that Georgia was on set for had its world premiere at a Oscar an Oscar qualifying film festival out on screen in Atlanta. I really wanted to go, but I was on set this week. But that's another queer film festival. That's really awesome.
I will say Out on Screen is the same organization that puts VQFF on.
Yes, they're... Like, VQFF is kind of, like, under...
VQFF is, like, under the umbrella of Out on Screen.
Out on Screen, yeah.
And just, yeah, the work that they're doing is... Oh, my goodness. I could rave about it for so long. But, yeah, okay, so we've established festivals as cultural events.
Yes.
Sites of learning.
Yes.
Sites of education.
Yes.
Sites of networking.
I'm curious to know what your... Do you have like a poignant festival memory that's like your favorite or maybe like a horrible festival memory?
I mean, I feel like I'm really, again, I'm really in my, like, this summer was really when I began. So I, you know, thankfully we have had guests on the air that are definitely much more seasoned and
we are learning from the people that we're speaking to.
So real. And the lineup is exciting. I'll let you guys, I'll
so
say that
exciting.
Right now. We've got another person coming next week who's going to talk to us a lot about festivals, and that's really cool. A festival memory. I'm trying to think, like, something profound.
It doesn't have to be profound. I have a memory. It's not super profound.
Why don't you share first? Let us know.
Oh, well, I just think you, like, as much as you can connect with some awesome people at festivals, there's also some very interesting characters and a lot of big egos at times.
That's
and I remember
true.
Being at Fest Film Festival in Espino, Portugal. Ooh. And there was this one producer that was at, like, every session that I went to. And he would have his hand up and, like, be called on to ask a question. And the question was always him telling everybody how seasoned and professional and great he is. and then like not really a question. Right. And then I remember he came to attend our
like the UBC screening.
The UBC screening, and he was just so rude, like talking over films and like stood up at the end and just asked really rude questions about like, well, why would you want to show this in this space? Did you not notice that people walked out? Which, by the way, you guys, happens all the time in screenings and film festivals. People come and go because there's so much going on. We were also in a hot room.
Probably helps you develop a thicker skin.
100%. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
People just walking out while watching your films. But yeah, that was a poignant memory for me just because I was like, oh, there are a mixture of different characters that you, not necessarily as an audience member, but like the panelists and the people that are like mediating the Q&As,
yeah,
they have to navigate that and the types of questions and the types of... Yeah, critiques they might be getting on their films or, that was just something very interesting to me. And I was like, okay, dude. Because at first I was like, wow, this guy, clearly he's doing a lot. There's a lot going on. And then I was like, wow, you're just, now this is.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely interesting. I feel like that's, I'm gonna
draw.
Not
to negatively talk about someone.
No,
but, like,
but
you know,
but it's so, I mean, I feel like that's an important piece of knowledge that we can share, you know, like. Also, being at a film festival doesn't just mean brag about yourself.
No, it doesn't.
You know,
at
like
all.
There's a way to network and express. In our first episode, Hannah was talking about when you're networking, just the importance of letting people know what you're interested in and what you want to do.
Yes.
And I think suffice to say, this means there's a very big difference between expressing interest in something and annoying everyone in the room.
And listing off your resume to 200 people every few hours.
Yeah, let's... okay, tip. Tip number one, avoid...
avoid doing
that.
What that guy did.
I think... I'm also thinking... Also, yeah, Fest, we should say, is the New Directors, New Films...
Oh, yes.
New Films Festival. So that festival is entirely, like... you know what? I don't know if it's all films that are like debuting for the first time, but definitely haven't been distributed widely. Directors that haven't been extremely commercially successful. To be honest, I don't remember what the parameters are.
Yeah, but I don't know either. But
generally speaking, new directors, new films.
Yes.
That's
the
kind of...
masterclasses were very awesome, though.
Yes.
Like, they had some very cool people come and talk.
Mm-hmm.
We had the editor of Into the Void.
Talk
to us, and the production designer of Perks of Being a Wallflower. Aww. That was so awesome. I'm going blank now, but there were so many other amazing people.
I the writer of Manchester by the Sea, Kenneth Lonergan. You know what? I feel like I almost didn't even appreciate the value of some of the people that I was meeting because I just didn't know who they were.
Yes.
Not because...
Melody London, amazing editor that we met, spent like the whole week with.
Yeah. Not even like I... Oh my goodness. Just retrospectively, I'm like, I should have... Why didn't I just Google things?
That is something that
myself.
I think we would both highly recommend is when you're going into a space like we do with interviews or just like meeting... A quick Google search will take you so far in just like, who is this person? What have they done? Oh, I know this work. I can bring that up with them.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be like, I know everything about you because that, you know, like there's no need.
Well, I was just going to say, I had this weird moment the other day where I was watching, it was like an Instagram reel of Greta Gerwig talking about reading Kenneth Lonergan's plays.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about how much she loved his writing. And I was like, that name is so familiar. And then I Googled him and I was like, his picture came up and I was like, oh, I met him. Like, oh, I know this person.
Yes.
And that was like that felt like a really surreal moment because I was like, oh my goodness. Greta Gerwig is a fan of you.
Crazy. That's crazy.
Obviously not that you need Greta Gerwig to be your fan to have your career validated.
Were they doing a masterclass?
Yes, it was a masterclass in just writing and they were essentially going through their, kind of their writing process and, yeah, again, just so many valuable insights. Like, I think that's my problem during that festival was trying to strike a balance between films or classes. And I was like, you know what? The classes feel like the value proposition.
I'll be honest. I think I went to see like two features at that festival, but then the rest of it, I was so exhausted the whole time.
Yeah.
I was having a great time, but oh my God, was it
work hard,
a
play hard.
Full on experience.
Yeah.
So yeah, I went to as many master classes as I could. Took a lot away from the casting director's masterclass. Really loved that.
Yeah.
Caprice Crawford, I connected
there
with after.
Go.
Really inspired by.
I
was also really curious about like what the industry is like in Europe. So like having those conversations about what their experience is like internationally was was really cool, and I think I took a lot away from that as well.
We immediately start going into high-pitched sounds. We're going to take a quick little break, and then we'll be back to talk a little bit more about our VQFF experience.
Oh, yes. Whoop,
whoop. Da-da-da-da.
Sorry, folks. Some
technical difficulties. Give us 1 second.
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19 inspired changes, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
Royal Otis, live in concert, coming to the PNE Forum in Vancouver on October 22nd. Fresh off the heels of their debut album, Prats in Pain, and the viral cover of Murder on the Dance Floor for Triple J's Like a Virgin, don't miss the Australian duo on their biggest tour yet. Royal Otis, Glory to Glory Fall Tour. Tickets are on sale now at ticketleader.ca. TicketLeader.ca.
And we are back. We are broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Hannah.
I'm Georgia.
And you're listening to Film Picnic. Welcome back, you guys.
We're here talking festivals.
We are.
We're here talking the Vancouver Queer Film Festival.
Oh, yes.
That we were fortunate to go attend in late September.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Tis the season.
Tis the season of the fest. If we can continue being annoying. Came up with that on the fly. And
TIFF also happened in September.
TIFF,
Toronto International Film Festival. One of my friends was in... Oh my god. I need to be able to remember names better. But one of my friends, a film that he was in, premiered at TIFF, and that was really awesome. It was Sandra Oh's film.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Love Sandra Oh.
Yeah.
Love Sandra Oh. Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's so funny. I feel like that's good to mention that, obviously we're Vancouver based. I feel like sometimes it's hard to see beyond the bounds of where I'm living. It's hard to think beyond the bounds of where I'm living. You know, if you want to talk about festivals on a grand scale, you got to talk about Venice. You got to talk about Cannes.
Oh my gosh,
you got to talk about,
talked about Sundance last week.
Slam Dance.
Yes, we did.
So much is happening. I think it is natural and makes sense that we're thinking about what's around us because that's really what's been keeping us so busy.
So busy, you guys.
Yeah, I think we can give ourselves a little space to talk a little bit more in depth about
some of the things that we saw.
Yeah. Do you feel compelled to start on anything, Hannah?
I feel compelled to start on the documentary that we saw. Let's start there. Go into our discussion about the panel, and then I have some questions about This Is Ballroom.
Oh, yeah.
First we attended a panel, but we're going to get into that in a second. The second movie that we saw, it was a full day event. For Georgia. I developed a migraine and went home after our first movie, but
that's okay.
We watched Bulletproof, A Lesbian's Guide to Surviving the Plot by Regan Latimer. Yeah. That was so funny.
Funny, witty.
So good.
Let's give a little description of what it was. This is the official description of the film. Quote, every time a lesbian character dies on TV is a stake through the heart for director Regan Latimer. Latimer embarks on a cross-country quest to uncover why Hollywood keeps, quote, burying their gays. Exploring how and why there are a disproportionate number of lesbian deaths in media, Latimer interviews TV writers and executives, queer community members, and fans to unravel this troubling phenomenon.
Can I say something that's related but kind of not related? I've been talking about Heartstopper all morning. I'm so sorry. Georgia, but I was watching season 3 last night, and I feel like that is one of the reasons I enjoy this show, is because I'm not so worried that everything is going to go wrong for the queer characters. Because usually in shows where, well, often in shows where the narrative is centered around queer identities, I don't know why there's always the need to make everything go wrong for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. So,
things go wrong, or, like, the entire story is
revolved just around their sexuality.
Yeah. But you know what? This was a beautiful, I think, a beautiful exploration of not necessarily just, like, the storylines itself, but kind of the production practices and behind...
how that happens.
Why that happens.
Because it's not just one writer deciding, yes, let's kill this lesbian character. And it's not what we kind of discovered through that film, is it's not necessarily people... writers even doing it consciously, necessarily.
Right, but...
it's kind of a system which is so ingrained and so expected that it's very much normalized for that. Mm-hmm. It's just a trope.
Yeah. I mean, very much, like, recommend that you guys, if you have the chance to go view this film, Bulletproof, A Lesbian's Guide to Surviving the Plot. But, yeah, essentially, I think within TV particularly, it was really interesting because they were talking about when you have... guest arcs, and you have you know, like, if you have a TV show with a series of regulars, and then you've got you know, the budget to have a guest appear in a string of 6 episodes, you have to have some way for them to enter the story, you have to have some way for them to exit the story. If that guest appearance is coming in as a same-sex relationship for one of the main cast members, somehow they have to exit after 6 episodes.
And also the stakes have to be majorly high, because otherwise, that's TV.
You need your audience to get invested in them, and instead of sending them away for whatever reason, isn't it so much more dramatic and impactful to... this, again, well, that's not personal opinion, but that's what they're expressing in the film.
This was what the writer of what, the 100 was saying? There were a few different
examples, but, you know, isn't it so much more impactful to get your audience really attached by providing this, like, really beautiful love story and then having them tragically die?
And it's like, well, yeah, but then it's like, what are we perpetuating there then?
And how is this impacting the community of people that are watching
these? How is this impacting young queer women, young queer people who watch that and go, wow, I've actually never seen a story where anybody who has experiences similar to mine live or end up happy, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just so beautiful. I think, too, a big part of it was, I mean, they were interviewing executives, they were interviewing psychologist experts about like fans, you know, people that are feeling really passionate about these characters. But for every fan that they were interviewing, there was also this really beautiful dynamic of everyone seemed to have a queer character from TV. And again, this is also spanning generations. So they were interviewing people that were older, younger. So you're kind of seeing a span of different characters throughout time, different queer characters throughout time. But everyone seems to have had a queer character or characters that they identified with or saw themselves represented in. Honestly, that made me emotional when we were watching it.
Do you have a queer character that...
You know what? We're talking about Glee. We're talking about Glee with Hannah's sweatsuit right now, because she's channeling Sue Sylvester. You know what? They do mention Brittany and Santana from Glee. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for it, though. I was like, as soon as they started talking about it, there were some older examples first, and then there was a segment about Ellen DeGeneres and, you know, her presence as a queer identity in the media.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, when are they going to talk about Glee? When are they going to talk about Glee? And then
bam.
And Glee particularly was an interesting example because that was, I mean, granted, that was coming at a turning point. You know, this is like mid-2000s.
It was still in a problematic era, I feel.
Still problematic era. I mean, some of the stuff they got away with saying on that show is ridiculous. But it didn't end in death, which was significant.
Yes.
And, you know, they even, like, Brittany and Santana get married on the show. Granted, you know, the conventions of it are a little odd.
I didn't watch, like, I've, like, rewatched Glee many times, but haven't watched, like, the last season or two seasons, whatever. Mm. So, yeah, the clip of them getting married in a double wedding, I was like, whoa, that's a choice.
It was.
That's a choice.
I will say Glee, in my opinion, seems to focus a little bit more on the queer. Well, I mean, I guess this is also just their writing choice that they were making for certain characters. But it's very much about Kurt, and it's very much about his boy-on-boy romance. Whereas
boy love. I love boy love.
Yeah. In a way, I feel like Brittany and Santana being two girls was still, there was still an element of, like, fetishization.
Oh,
and
for it was, there was 100%. There was.
There was,
little,
you know.
Cute little cheerleader outfits.
It's not the model. It's not the model, but you know what? It is.
It's something.
It's just
representation.
I was watching the Britney Spears episodes and I was like, this something, I don't know, something's happening. Like I was learning things. I don't know. I was just like, this
something's happening to
this
me.
Feels special and I don't know why. Yeah. Did you have a queer representation in media that you really felt like
there's
you aligned
no
with?
One that I can immediately pull to. Mm. Like no one growing up because I don't know. But definitely Willow from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I felt a strong connection to, not necessarily specifically because of her queer identity. I actually forgot that she was queer. That was a show. I know that's like a huge part of her character, but that was a show that me and my best friend Yenfei watched. And like, we always said that, like, I feel like I'm Willow, like me. Mm. I relate to Willow. I love her. I love her witchy vibes. Mm. But again, that story did end in tragedy and death. Her partner was murdered, and that was devastating, and she wanted to end the world.
I will say they spent, the documentary spends a fair amount of time kind of diving into a big upset. I think that was in
Willow.
2016.
Yeah.
For Willow, but I was going to say it spends a long time diving into the death of Lexa on The 100, which
that
was like
major.
Sparked this major
people were
backlash
like,
online.
Not okay.
The 100. You know what? I think I've seen a few episodes, but it's like a sci-fi series.
Yeah, it gives Gone, the book series. I don't know if you know what that is.
I don't.
I was into dystopian novels as a teen.
Mm-hmm. That was a strange sound. That's okay. It was a noise of affirmation.
Shall we touch quickly on the panel that we went to?
Let's.
There's so much to talk about and so little time, you guys.
It really does fly.
I get so excited
fly
to
by.
Talk on Friday mornings. It's my favorite time of the week. We attended a panel called Leveling Up Your Projects at Vancouver Queer Film Festival. The panelists were Alex Caulfield, Jason Carmen, Penta Moshle.
I think so.
And Mary Galloway was the moderator.
She was a moderator,
some very
but
valuable input as well.
Yeah. Also, it felt like just like a panel with four people. It didn't even necessarily feel like there was a moderator.
Yeah.
In
a wonderful way.
I feel like the panels that they put together. I mean, we took notes, but also like it was lucky that we got to attend this one because just scheduling wise, this is the one that worked out. But there were several panels at the festival that
looked really
interesting and exciting, which again, I love a panel. I love a chance to learn.
You asked
is that corny?
No. We're here to learn. This is what our show is. Oh, we just held hands. That was
we
romantic.
We accidentally touched hands, guys.
You asked a very good question. Do you remember what your question was?
Can I repeat it in the same articulation of what I originally
you
said?
You were very articulate, and I think even the moderator was like, wow.
I think
saw people nodding.
You know, Mary Galloway had a really great answer. And the question was, how do you reckon with gaining an opportunity and knowing in some part or grappling with in some part that the opportunity may be because you're being tokenized. Mm-hmm. So like being in a room because there's an initiative to have a queer person in the room, so you're thrown in there. Or like, you know, is your story being selected because they believe in the power of what you're doing, or is it just that they have quotas to meet? Because, you know, the panel is called Leveling Up Your Projects, and I think it was a lot about like all of these speakers had really practical experience getting projects developed, and mm-hmm. a big part of being an independent filmmaker is getting funding and pitching yourself.
Huge.
And you know, they gave a lot of really great kind of advice on that, but because it was a queer film festival, I was just like, where does the intersection come in between your identity being a strength? And that was something that Jason Carmen mentioned, was like sometimes that is what gets you into the room.
And to be honest, I will say, as a woman of color, as a queer person, I definitely, I grapple with the, like, why am I here? Mm-hmm. Like, there is a little bit of imposter syndrome that comes with being a token character a lot of the time. And it's like, am I here because of my talent, or am I here because you need someone who fits this quota? But at the same time, it's like, well, I am talented, and I'm glad that you needed someone that fits the quota, this quota, because now I'm here and I get to have a voice in this room. But, and, or should I say, Mary Galloway had a really awesome point. Did you write it down? I think I can remember it.
Is the direct quote? Let me check. Let me see.
Oh, here. Tokenization happens when you are given an opportunity without the power, which just summed it up so beautifully. It's like, her example was being an Indigenous writer in a writer's mm-hmm. room and being the only Indigenous writer. And, you know, it might be great to have that opportunity to have a voice in that room, but if you're not given credit, that's tokenization.
Yeah.
If you're being taken for something mm-hmm. that's part of your identity or part of your unique experience, but not given the power or the credit to amend or change.
Yeah. I think she was touching on, to just being like being offered a position and then having the forethought to, maybe from past experiences that she's had, negotiate and be like, I need like creative control, and I need writing credits, and I need you to tell me that I can write at least one episode if I'm going to be on this show, you know, like,
I'm not just going to be in the room.
I'm not just going to be in the room.
Like, to say that, I was in the room.
Right.
And give my wonderful thoughts, opinions, experiences, and share that with you for you to then just
to have them ignored.
And not, yeah.
Yeah.
Ignored or just taken without credit.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Incredibly important on that aspect as well. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, there was so much good. I feel like they were all, you know, I mean, at points it kind of rounded back to identity, but then there were also just points where they were just, I mean, at the end of the day, they're just something, really intelligent filmmakers that are giving great advice.
Something that I really, like, major things that I really took away as someone who has an international background, like, all of my family is back home in Australia, so I really do grapple with, you know, the film industry is really great in North America, and I have lovely opportunities here, and what are the opportunities like in a place where the film industry is a lot smaller and there is a lot of fear about kind of being away from that? But I think Mary, again, specifically, had mm-hmm. some great points about you can find community kind of wherever you are. I said Manitoba last episode. It's not Manitoba. It's
It is Winnipeg.
Winnipeg. It's
Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Okay, you guys. Geography. Like, going back to Winnipeg, like, she moved because work kept pulling her.
It's Manitoba, right? That's really embarrassing for us.
You guys.
I'm like, quite sure it is.
Okay, neither of us grew up in Canada. Actually, that's not true. Anyway.
Winnipeg, Manitoba. Okay, wait, I'm, like, thinking back to the song that I learned in social stat. I'm so sorry. This is a poor use of time.
No, but just, like, just the fact that you can find community everywhere, and the fact that, like, you don't have to be in LA. You don't have to be in New York to have mm-hmm. a life that not necessarily revolves around film, but like have a life in film. And something else that I took away, which is a major thing for me as a film production student, burnout within the program happens monthly, happens every year. It's really bad. And that is something that is consistent kind of with what is expected of the hours in the industry. It's actually crazy. 12 to 15 hour days mm-hmm. on your feet. Like, outside, burnout is so real. So them, you know, Jason and Alex had some great points about making sure you have a work-life balance, that you have other things going on outside of film that you're able to move to, whether it's a different
Alex
job.
Was talking about their family,
academics,
too, like
family,
being a mother,
friends, like
prioritizing your personal life.
100% film is beautiful, but it is does not need to be everything and all consuming. You can have a life in film without, you know, not being able to see your family for months at a time.
Yeah. I will say, I think Panta had a really, Panta was like talking about how they only have to sleep 5 hours a night and could like, someone said work-life balance, and then Panta goes work-work balance. And I was like, that's insane. But you know what? Also, I think
there's value in that
different,
too.
Different, there's different methods that work for different people.
Yeah.
Really quickly, just because these are notes that I feel like are really valuable, mm-hmm. and just for aspiring filmmaker people out there, I feel like these are little nuggets that are important to share.
Period.
Number one, when we were talking about, someone asked about how to like build relationships with funding bodies.
Ooh, that's good.
And
yes. Good
like
note.
Kind of, you know, when you're submitting for grants and festivals and those kinds of things. I think there was a general consensus that there's no shame in submitting many times. And
it's actually better because they will remember your name, whether or not they remember where it came from. They'll be like, oh, I recognize that name.
Yeah, I think Mary Galloway touched on this. Alex Caulfield talked about this too. Just like consistency and showing up, and you know, even if you're like realistic, even if you in your head don't think it's something that you're going to achieve, or like maybe you're not going to get the funding this year, or your project isn't in a state of strength that you want it to be. Like
most projects are not in a state of strength when they submit for funding.
Still, just try. And then that's one more time that a funding body is gonna see your name. And
it's a numbers game, you guys, because there's so many wonderful projects that don't get selected. So, you know, the more you can put your name in the ring, the higher chance there is of you getting funded.
Yeah.
Not to cut you off.
No.
You might be about to mention this as well, but they also mentioned the importance of not just going to funding bodies, but
Individual people can be funders as well.
Individual people can be funders as well. Corporations can be funders as well. Sponsorships was huge, and I'm going to talk about that in our next little segment. But like, it doesn't necessarily just need to be funding bodies that you go to. There are other ways to source funds for your film.
Yeah.
Community fundraising,
like individuals that are contributing to film festivals, and those
people
are
who got the money,
people who want to support the arts,
investors.
There's a lot of I feel like part of their message was like, be scrappy, just like go after it. And anyway, there's so, oh my goodness,
there's so much. Is there
always,
anything we want to touch on before we go on a break?
I want to give a shout out to their new executive director of the Vancouver Queer Film Festival, Eli Morris. They were just incredibly helpful. I spoke to them quite a lot. There was a reception at a film studio called Boldly afterwards.
Love Boldly. I applied to a job there my first year.
Yeah.
Didn't get it. But
you know what?
I applied.
And now they'll recognize your
name
again.
Now they'll know who I am.
Eli Morris was lovely. I got to talk to one of the filmmakers, Bruno Tadieu. I might be pronouncing their last name wrong. They are the writer and director of Pill Nation, which debuted at VQFF. Oh my goodness. Okay, the other films we saw, I saw Paradise is Burning by Mika Gustafson. That was a really beautiful film about family and queer identity in families, and that was beautiful. This is Ballroom, which was about the ballroom and drag scene outside Rio.
Yes.
Rio, Brazil. Just, oh my goodness, there's so much good stuff, you guys. As always, time flies by, and there's more we want to talk about. We are going to go to
a quick break.
And then we'll be back to talk a little bit more about POV.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is E-Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. estudio.cafe.
It's Nardwuar, a human serviette, and you're listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM at doo-doo-loo-doo, doo-doo.
We have been called the Indians.
Justified in opening fire that day. Amy Allen has more.
The virus took on many shapes. The bear, the elk, the antelope.
Hosted by the Indigenous Collective of CITR 101.9 FM, Unseated Airwaves unveils the hidden pages of Indigenous history and contemporary existence. We are back and looking for passionate folks to contribute to the process of putting together our weekly radio show. Our community centers Indigenous joy, excellence, and current issues. Friends and allies are welcome. No experience is necessary. Come learn with us. Our Instagram is Unseated Airwaves, and that's the best way to keep up with us. If you're interested in getting involved or you have any questions, email me, indigenouscollective@citr.ca.
Hello, everyone. We are broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Georgia.
And you're listening to Film Picnic. Welcome back. Second ad break. Third segment.
We're coming in hot.
In this segment, I'm so excited. We are going to be talking about the Persistence of Vision Film Festival that happened last weekend at UBC.
Can I interrupt you?
You may.
We just need a moment of, not even a moment of silence, but a moment of pure appreciation and just, Hannah, I commend you.
Thank you so much
for all your work.
Thank you.
Hannah was just one of the main organizers for the festival, just really absolutely like bringing your organizational slayer.
Thank you, my producing.
Yes. I think it was just you did a beautiful job.
It was so special. I remember being in first year attending the first POV film festival and being like, I cannot wait to be an organizer. And also just being so inspired by all the films that were there. And so as soon as our third year finished, I was like, okay, guys, what's happening for POV? We need to start organizing. And so, yeah, we started preparing it in April. We started talking about it in April before school finished, and we planned it throughout the whole summer. Me, Sarah Shahab, Stella Merkel, Emmy Chopolis, Josh, Kisei, Mungo, all of these. It was actually a tiny team. There was six of us.
I mean, for a festival that was...
We had...
Accommodating so many people that was... And so many films. And so many filmmakers.
How many films?
So much going on.
8 + 5, 12 films showing
good,
at the festival.
Good math.
Thank you so much. I panicked. I was like, oh my God, am I going to be able to do it? We had 12 films showing. We raised over $20,000 in sponsorships just for awards.
My God.
That's like what people were awarded that wasn't going into the festival. And we raised over $4,000 in ticket sales for next year's festival, and we did that all with under the budget of $1,000.
That is seriously impressive, Hannah. That is just...
Thank you.
That's just you...
Thank you.
Why can't I think of anything better than, like, pat yourself on the back?
I feel
like that's the classic affirmation.
It was amazing, and honestly, it was just, like, I'm so impressed by our tiny little team that pulled it together and worked so well together, and we learned so much, and it was such an exciting thing, too, having Film Picnic there. You, Georgia, killing it with the press. We had a backdrop. We had Georgia and Jill there.
We had a little setup. We had a setup
doing interviews with our utensils. Utensils as microphones.
Actually, can we, for anyone that's just tuning in, can we explain what POV is?
Oh my goodness, yes. So Persistence of Vision is the UBC Film Festival, but it's not coordinated by the department or UBC at all. It's affiliated, but it's technically not affiliated with UBC because not a single professor has their hands on the project. It's all student run.
And this is the film production students.
This is film production specifically. So all of the films that like come out of the main production courses in your third and fourth year. So that's the course that you have to pitch your film. It's selected. Each film costs between $3,000 to $5,000 to make. And key teams of three or four people and then your crew is about 30. Student films, right? Made over 3 days. But yeah, it's a film festival that is organized. I don't think it was always organized by students, but I don't remember. There was some sort of political thing that happened. I think COVID also like made things a bit weird. But it is entirely coordinated by students each year. It used to happen in April at the end of the year, but that's like a chaotic time for students. So we have it at the beginning of the year because it's really awesome. First of all, you get the summer to plan. And then also it's so exciting for the first and second years and third and fourth years to see the films that were made last year at the very beginning of the year and be inspired and excited for the year ahead.
It was beautiful. It was a beautiful event. And I think...
Did that explain it? It's a student-run film festival.
Yeah. That was a great explanation. I feel like it's been in
the
zeitgeist.
It's a two-day film festival.
It's been in the zeitgeist of UBC. I just wanted to like
contextualize it. This year was the 34th year that it was on. So it's been around for a while.
It's an institution.
It's an institution. Yes.
I'm hoping we can just give a little shout out to
all the incredible
to the filmmakers.
I'm just gonna
read their names.
Please.
And the film that they created. We did get to interview. We didn't, unfortunately, we weren't able to interview every single filmmaker because it was just chaotic and there was so much going on. But we will have the footage of the interviews and footage in the audio. Well, why would it just be
and the audio? Yeah.
We'll have a long form video on our YouTube pretty soon. So we'll put a little reminder on Instagram, but if you
hopefully reels on Instagram too. We wanted to include sections of interviews in this episode, but there's so much.
And I'll say too, I was able to screen the films and then ask questions, not just about like, oh,
yes,
how does it feel to be here?
Watched the films before the festival,
but I hadn't even
seen the films before the festival, and I produced two of them. You saw them before me.
But that was so key, I think, too, because it was a great opportunity to, as a film studies person, I don't know, like, ask actually insightful questions about the content of the films. And it was just so beautiful to see how passionate the filmmakers were, truly, and, like, being asked a question about the content of the film or, you know, the intention behind choices that they were making. Like, it was just so exciting to, I think for some of them, it was apparent that they were feeling really validated and really like,
it's so special. It was such
people
like,
caring about
POV
your work in a legitimate
never,
way.
As far as I'm concerned, has never had press before. So that was a very, I mean, this year we really wanted to elevate POV, but yeah, having press there was really special, not just for us and exciting for us, but the filmmakers I know all really appreciated it and thought it was really awesome.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's talk about it. Let's just go through a couple of the films that were screened. So we had Old Soul by director-writer Juliette Leach. We had
Juliette was my mentor in my first and second year.
Motherhood, a one-man conceptual experience by Emmy Chopless.
Yes, Emmy. One best editing.
Yes, true. Okay, thank you. Please chime in with the awards
here. One
best
editing for third year.
Okay. Turn the Other Cheeky Little Shit by Tristan Ramos.
Yes, Tristan.
Beneath Our Skin by Nairi Lidden Elray.
Beautiful.
Ashes and Grace by Mac Pettit.
Oh, Ashes and Grace swept with awards. Best director, best screen. Oh my God. So many awards.
Yeah.
Won a lot.
Yeah.
Best cinematography.
Very Christopher Nolan kind of like just realism. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. I was lucky to be on that set. I was lucky to.
PA.
PA. It was just cool to like. You know, it's always cool to see behind the curtain and see how things get made. Pulse by, I pronounced his name as Benjamin Moland.
It's Moland.
Moland. Okay. Yeah. Good. Thank you for the correction.
That one won audience choice. Those kids, it was too, I don't need to go into whole detail, but
a story about friendship.
Yeah. They slayed.
Beautiful. Sticks of Our House by Penny Gullion.
Yay. I produced that one. That one was very special. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
A set that Hannah invited me to be a
you
part
did,
of as well.
You did wardrobe. You killed it. That tie, amazing.
We had Love Wraps Around You by Jules LaBrash.
That was beautiful.
Beautiful representation of anxiety. Okay, wait. I won't give descriptions for all of these. Chrome by Josh Bradley Garrido.
He was also lead design. That Chrome won Best Lead Performance, and I'm not sure if it won anything else, but they killed.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Includes our good friend
editing.
Ethan White, who we mentioned almost every episode.
Yes. Ethan, we love you.
Yeah, Ethan was in there. That was great. The Archipelago by Nushi Sharma.
Best editing. Killed it.
Beautiful animation in that one. Pumpkinhead by Chris Berry. Just really cute and endearing. Lost in Distance by Annie Liu.
Lost in Distance swept as well.
beautiful swept, cinematography.
Best director.
Beautiful cinematography, for real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful coloring. And then best Noka by Sara Shahab.
I also produced Noka. That one was really special.
Yeah. I can't, like, say how grateful I am to be there, how grateful I was to, like, be a part
of
it.
I'm so grateful for you, and thank you for carrying that. That week was, like, chaos. I was on set. I was
constant
doing
chaos.
POV. We were doing the radio show. So I'm grateful for you, Georgia.
Oh, I'm grateful for you, Hannah. Aww. Yeah, stay tuned, guys. We'll have a video with all those interviews up on YouTube, and I think you're really going to want to tune in because everyone was so passionate, and it was just great.
Yeah, and with that...
Again, we're at the end of our time. It always goes by
so
fast.
There's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for joining us this Friday morning or whenever you're listening.
Whenever you're listening.
We love you.
It's a rainy Friday morning for us.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to the bank and then I'm going to work. So please enjoy the rest of your day. And don't forget to check us out on Instagram at FLM Picnic.
Or you can find recordings of our episodes online at www.citr.ca/radio/filmpicnic.
Or
Film-picnic.
Or you can find us on Spotify at Film Picnic and hopefully other streaming services soon.
Yeah, so true.
And with that, we'll see you next week on Film Picnic as we debunk the film industry with meaningful conversation.
One picnic at a time.